You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Claret and Blue. We're joined by an absolute legend, hero, inspiration, Mr. Stillian Stan Petrov. How are you, Stan?
I'm good, Matt. How are you? Long time.
It has been a while, actually. We were just debating before we jumped on the call. I think the last time that I actually spoke to you, we had a little kind of kick about at Bodymore on some new kit launch, I think, a couple of years ago. Dan will put it. Drop it back in the edit later, but there's a clip. I'm about 2 stone heavier than I am now. And I think you just little cheeky nutmeg there, you just absolutely ruined me.
You just lucky one, Matt. Oh, look at this one. Well, listen, I haven't seen you for years, and it's always been a pleasure to talk to you because you'll be a great man and you have great manners, and you asked a good question, which is something different, which I always enjoy talking to you. But I haven't seen you for a while. What I've seen, you've been very active on Twitter, which I like to see.
No, that's made me blush now. That is, you say strong words about me. I'm supposed to be saying the nice things about you. What we're going to do, because the Stillian Petrov story, and rightly so, has been told by many journalists many times, and what a story it is. But rather than us doing it the traditional way, we've got a random mug of questions, and we're going to pull questions out and jump from one place to the next. So one minute it could be Martin O'Neill, the next minute it could be you having a kick about for a Sunday league team. You comfortable if we do it like that?
Yeah, of course. That looks quite interesting. So I'm looking forward to it. Let's see what the first one get.
Right, let's delve in here. I bet it'll be a really terrible one. Mind you, most of them are terrible. So let's have a look.
Have you wrote them?
I've written them down myself, yeah. So when people stop you in the street, what's the most common thing they say to you?
You know, Matt, these days is, how are you? How's your health? Nobody asks anymore about my career and what I'm doing at the moment. Everybody wants to know about how I'm feeling, if I'm healthy, if everything is behind me. Unfortunately, that's what came to. And, you know, I just had to accept it. It was really difficult at the start because when you've given everything to become a footballer, when you give all your youth to work and develop and have only one target and one direction to become a top athlete, and all of a sudden that's been taken away for you, and only question you get is, how's your health? How are you? It's really painful, but in the same hand, in the other hand, you know, it's good because I can answer with a great answer, with I'm well. And everything is going well, which was very difficult for me to accept at the start, which is a great question to start with.
Well, you won't get that question now because you've already answered it. And I'm really chuffed that you are in good health and you're looking great, mate, to be honest. Before we carry on, actually, the Christmas tree, I've got a strict rule in the Kendrick house that until December the 1st, the Christmas tree stays up the loft. So what's the thinking behind getting the tree up early, Stan?
You know, after everything we've been through this year, I think every single person around the world with the COVID and all the issues, we just wanted to find something positive, something quite interesting for the kids, you know, to get the Christmas tree, get them earlier, get the festive mood starting quite early, and just get something that you can look forward to, because I don't think that we couldn't look forward to anything in 2019. So at least we want to finish it in the right way. At least we want to finish it happy, smiling. And this is something we decided to do quite early.
While we're talking about Christmas, I'm going to break my own rules now. And I know this question is lurking in the mug somewhere, but I'm going to ask it now anyway because it seems the right place to ask.
You can't ask that question. You say you're only going to ask the question from the mug.
It's my rules. My rule.
That's fine.
So just this one. What does Stillian Petrov want for Christmas? What kind of things do you ask for and what kind of things do you get?
health and togetherness. That's what I like. Health, personally, as a family, and togetherness with everybody around the world, because it looks like in the last year or so, with everything that is going on, I think everybody's pulling in a different direction rather than pulling in the same direction, which is really hard to see. But I hope the togetherness will be togetherness and health. That's what I'll say.
That's a really nice answer, but you must get a couple of pairs of socks and a DVD as well, haven't you?
You know, me and my wife, we always talk about, Christmas present, what we should buy each other. So we decided that way. We just, no surprises. We're just going to pick our own present. We're going to wrap it up and that. And I've only asked for one thing, and that's a trolley for my golf. That's what I said. That's what I said. I don't want anything else. I had enough of carrying. I need a trolley. So she promised me that she'll get me a trolley. I have to choose it, and she'll just order it. So nice and simple. No complication in our life. I don't need any more complications and surprises, Matt.
Let's have a look at this next question that I've managed to pull out there. What was it like coaching under Tim Sherwood? And did you prefer coaching the first team under Sherwood or when you were doing the youth team stuff under Paul Lambert?
Very, a question which have different answers, but for me, it was a great experience to work under Tim Sherwood in the first team. I've learned a lot. He was really good to me. Obviously, at that time, I was coming back from a very difficult battle, my personal battle. So he was very kind. He was very good. He gave me a lot of responsibilities, which I really enjoy. And the main thing that season that we managed to stay up and the team was starting to play really well at the end of the season. Then when he left and Paul Lambert took over, then what happened is he offered me a role under 23, working with Gordon Cairns, which for me was a completely different dynamic in the club. I had the pleasure to work with young players, with the players who are looking to break into the first team. And for me, I had to deal with those players more mentally than anything else, because they didn't feel that there was a pathway or they can make in the first team. So as much as you had to work with them and develop them on the pitch, you had to work with them psychologically as well. So for me, it was a completely different experience. But I enjoyed the both roles as well, because I was around football. I was on the pitch. I could coach. I could speak with the players. I was in the dressing room environment as well. So for me, it was a very good learning curve, and I really enjoyed it.
Was it strange going back into the first team scene when there'd be only a handful, but there'd be two or three players who you'd have been teammates with, and then you've got to suddenly kind of be a bit like the kind of school teacher, I suppose?
Yeah, it was really difficult, and the boys were still accepting me with one of them, and they still wanted to have a banter, but for me, I had to understand very quickly the fine line between being a coach and being a former teammate or being their teammate. So I had to understand that the dynamic of that kind of process. But the funny things for me was about understanding what coaching is all about and how to deal with different individuals. And for me, was a great time at Villa. And you know what? If I was healthier and I had more energy, I would never come out. But it came way too early for me, because to be involved in academy or being involved in a first team, you need to be full of energy. You need to be upbeat. You need to be going with a smile every morning. So for me, it was very difficult. And that's why I decided to move away for it for a while, because I wasn't ready physically and mentally. I wasn't ready, because as much as I wanted to stay around football, I forgot that those past 2 years before that, I was hit with a lot of chemotherapy. I was on the hospital. I was in the hospital all the time. So for me, it came too early. If that opportunity was when I was healthier and when I was strong, like now, I would have stayed and I would definitely enjoy even more. But for me, become rather the enjoyment, it became quite a heavy duty for me, because I didn't have the energy that I used to have.
Another quick follow-up to that. In terms of Sherwood, because obviously he's a fascinating character to us, because we only saw little bits of him in the press room and he was only there for 6 or 7 months. What's he like? Is the personality that we see the same when he's around the training ground? Is he that kind of a bit of a kind of Jack the Lad character?
Yeah, he's very respectful. I've learned a lot from him. Like I said before, he managed to fill me in exactly what management is, what you have to do, how you have to approach players, how you have to approach your staff, how you have to be around a football club. He was very bubbly character. He was very positive, which was a great benefit for me because I like to work with positive people, and he was one of them. He would never complain. He always encouraged. And for me, it was something interesting to see how somebody, when he was under pressure, because he was under a lot of pressure, he still found a face to come every morning to smile and encourage others. Even he was hurt deep down. So it was very interesting for me to see.
Let me delve back into the mug. There's the brandy.
Getting that mug. Are you? How many questions you've got there?
Oh, you're here all week. Stand now.
Go on.
Let's have a look. As far as I can remember, you got the captain's armband around 2009, I think, when Gareth Barry left and Martin Larsson couldn't carry on. What kind of captain were you, Stan? And by that, I kind of mean a little bit of detail, looking after the fines, sorting out the privileges and the players' tickets. If I was your teammate, what would it be like having Stylian Petrov as a captain alongside me?
I would say reliable, dependable, trustful. It's this three thing that I always try to maintain into my skills. I want to be that kind of captain. And you mentioned Gareth Barry, a great person and a friend as well, who left a big gap when he left Aston Villa. And to be honest, when I took over after Gareth, I was a bit concerned. I had a lot of concern about, can I feel his boots? Can I have the same charisma? Can I have the same power as he has, as a player, as a captain as well? So for me, it was a big worry at the start. But, you know, I had to work really hard to show the boys that they can trust me, to show the boys that I'm the right captain, that I'm the right leader, and I can make others better, not just myself, which I managed to do that very quickly, and my job became very easy in the following few years. I can walk you through about a story that you're very aware, if you remember, when Gerard Houllier took over. He left me out of the team for nearly 3.5 months. At that time, he brought McCoon, which he was a great player. I was playing well, but I found myself in a very difficult situation. Obviously, he wanted to play McCoon, and he had the rights to do that, but he didn't have the rights to drop me because I was playing well. But if you put yourself in my shoes, I was a captain. Do I have to go and complain? Do I have to go and show faces? Do I have to go and pretend that I'm not happy? Well, I couldn't do that because by that time, I've earned quite a good respect. The players were trusting me. The players were asking a lot of questions. I've become their mentor and their friend, which is more important than anything else, Matt. So for me, I had to make a really difficult decision. Do I become Stylian Petrov, the captain who don't care about the players, don't care about the club anymore, and just do what I want to do and I could just leave? Or maybe I have to continue and be the man that I've always shown, dependable, trustful, and reliable. What I had to do these 3.5 months, I have to go every day. I was burning inside out. So, I mean, you can imagine, you know me. You knew me as a person, as a player as well. So I was burning inside out, and I couldn't show that. I had to go every day with a smile in training. I had to work harder than everybody else. You know, it becomes difficult when the players start asking you questions about why you're not playing. Well, at that time, the team was not doing very well. So you can imagine the frustration I had as a captain, as a person as well, as a player. But at the next moment, that I had to deal with it in the right manner. I had to act in the right with the right approach. I had to make sure the team still performed. Still, doesn't matter what my individual issue is with the manager or he had with me, I still had to show that determination, that desire, and that strive to get better first individually, but after as a team, and to support the team. So it was a very difficult 3.5 months. But what I've learned from those 3.5 months that you have to be patient. Sometimes other priorities are more important than your own priorities, and you just have to trust the process. I've managed to do that. And by answering your question is, you have to be the right captain and you have to deal with certain situations in different ways. We talk about players, we talk about what they're going through, but sometimes you don't know the full details of what's happening internally and how players deal with it. So stories like that will inspire younger kids and younger players and players that actually are captains at the moment and get walking into football, how to deal with a certain situation and how to act and be a man in the right manner.
I've just pulled this one out. I don't know whether you can see it, but by complete coincidence, it says, sum up your time under Gerard Houllier in one story. I think you've already done it, haven't you?
No, I had a great time with Gerard Houllier. He was very caring person. He just had to make a decision, and I had to really, really understand that because he just wanted to do the best of the team. And as any manager, he wants to play the best players. And at that time, he thought that McCune was better player for me. So for me, I had to prove him wrong. I had to make sure that I'll change his view about it. And I managed to do that. And he was, at the end, he was a person who came and shook my hand and he said he was wrong with the decision, but he was really relieved and really happy that I stood like everybody else would tell him what kind of person I was, but he had to understand himself. And he managed to do that. He shook my hand, he apologized, and he said, you know what, I was wrong. And I'm glad that you didn't give up on me first and in the team. Because if you remember that season, we were in trouble and we went on, I think in the last 10 games, we went with 8 wins, 1 loss and 1 draw. And he managed to finish 11 of that season. So he was a good man. He was paying a lot of attention to the details. He wanted the team to play in a certain way. Obviously, the team wasn't responding the way he wanted them to play, which made it even more difficult. And overall, I was quite happy. I never had problem with any manager. I know that they had to make decisions. But overall, if I had to sum up, I'll say he's a very positive manager who I've learned a lot. He taught me a lot as well.
What we got next? Hang on.
Go on, then.
If I did this with my hands, hang on, I can't count. Is that right?
Yeah, is that 5-1 you're talking 5-1. About?
5-1. Well, if I did that with my hands, what would that mean? What would you think with that?
Well, I think what afternoon that was, Matt. We played really well as a team. It was a local derby, one of the biggest derbies, and we managed to crush them. We managed to play really well. We celebrated really well as well after the game, but. You know what? I wasn't surprised about that result because at that time we were flying. At that time, the team was full of confidence. We had some incredible players and we loved playing together, which made us even more stronger. The unity, the togetherness in that team, the desire, the winning mentality, we had everything. We had everything. And I wasn't surprised of that result because we just couldn't wait for that game. And we felt before the game that we were ready. We can go and win it in a right manner.
So you said that you celebrated well. Come on, give us a little bit of insight. What would it be like? What would dressing room celebrations be like? Because you've got some big characters there. Where would you go?
You're asking the right question. Where you won't go? We would be everywhere. We would be celebrating. We are. As much as we played together, we like to get together, we like to celebrate, we wanted to make sure that we enjoy our victories as well, which was very important. We were everywhere. Some of the boys will be down London, Manchester, Birmingham. We always, after a win like that, Martin will always give us 2-3 days off. So the boys loved it. Everybody knew that if we win, if we get the right result, we'll be off. Some of them will be in London, Manchester. Some will be in different places. But we knew that that was coming. We knew that if we play, if we win, if we do well, we'll get our well-deserved break as well.
You don't strike me as a big drinker, Stillian. You strike me as a very kind of professional.
I I'm professional, but don't get me wrong. If I have to drink, I will drink. I'm not lightweight. Well, I'm now. I'm too old now. I'm too old for that. But I was very professional. I had to be professional. This is part of our job. But when we had our time, downtime, when we had that private time, of course, I'll have a drink. Not the best drinker. I'm not a big shot drinker. I can't do shots. If I'm shots, I usually get sick. I like a beer or a nice wine, so I kind of enjoy that. If we get into the shop, then I'm in trouble.
So just on that 5-1, you're right that I think that Villa scored. I mean, we'll get to the Derby game in one of the questions later for obvious reasons, but I think you battered Derby, battered Bolton, and battered Blues within the space of 3 weeks. I think there might have been 15 goals scored in three games, and that side was just kind of dripping goals, really, wasn't it, with the talent and the pace in it?
You know, the funny thing is when I moved out from Celtic, I used to score goals that you have to play box to box. And the time when you just mentioned those three games, I moved from Celtic and I became an Aston Villa a player. Martin O'Neill at that time decided for me to step back and play more deeper position. And that was one of the reasons. Because I remember having conversation with him in his room, and he said to me, I don't want you to go forward anymore. I've got better players going forward. I've got players that can create. I've got players with urgency, with intensity, with creativity. We will score enough goal. What I wanted you to do is just look after them when we lose the ball. And funnily enough, I couldn't even argue with that, Matt. I couldn't even say, you know, you're wrong or I can do better. Because if you look at the players, Garrett, you end up with 12, 13 goals. Ashley, Stewie Downing, then James Milner there, Gabby Agbonlahor, John Carew. We can go on and go on. We had incredible team going forward. And if you remember, we had a lot of chats about it. The teams that are playing against us, they had a fear in their eyes. Everybody who came to play against us, they knew they're in for a difficult afternoon because we had that urgency. If somebody can say what kind of styles we had, I don't think we can actually pick and point of what exactly style we've got. We had everything. We had strength at the back. We have a speed. We have the urgency. We've got the winning mentality. We have the experience as well. So we had a very well-balanced team, which many people didn't realize that. And we were really hard to beat. We were very difficult to beat because we didn't take that as a solution for us. We always wanted to go and win. And we had those kind of players, and we have those kind of characters as well in the team.
Do you think, and again, I'm going away from my mug for a minute, but do you think it was a Champions League team in everything but finishing in the Champions League places? It was so close, wasn't it?
Yeah, and this is the biggest regret. I thought we could do much better. I think always, if you look at it, the way the three seasons we actually finished in the top six, we kind of blew it at the end of the season. We didn't have that endurance and that ability to actually go for full season. We would have probably blown in the last three months, which made it really difficult for us. I think we should have done much better. I thought that we could have done much better in Europa League. If you remember everything that all carry on with the CSK Moscow game, we won the first game 2-1. We were quite comfortable, and I felt that we had ability and we had the strengths and we have the team to actually go further in that competition. Obviously, the manager and the club decided to go in a completely different direction. I remember that we didn't travel to Moscow, and that after that we end up losing. We couldn't win a game for about nearly 9 weeks, so it cost us the fourth spot. And that time when they made the decision, I think we were fourth, and we were about 10 points ahead of Arsenal. And then at the end, we end up 11 points behind them.
I have got a question about Moscow in there, so I'll rip it up in a minute. But would you have spoken to Martin ahead of him doing that or after him doing that? I mean, I presume the likes of yourself, Gareth, Ashley would have wanted to be involved, wouldn't you?
The way we found out about it, it was quite out of the blue. I think one day before that, it was a rumor, you know, in the dressing room, the rumors spread very quickly and you know what's happening. So a rumor started that probably most of us won't be traveling. I think the day before that, we had a meeting and the gaffer told us that it's his decision and he thinks it's better for the club. And I can understand where he's coming from, Matt, because we were fourth. We were 10 points ahead of Arsenal. And you will think a club as Aston Villa would be great to be in the Champions League. So I understood where he's coming from. Thinking afterwards, why would that decision was made? Maybe he didn't feel we had enough endurance and strength and power to actually compete in the Premier League and in European football as well. So that could be another reason as well. But I thought that we had that. We had the mentality. We had the mental and emotional preparation to actually go for it. But we didn't have the chance with the decision that was made, and we have to deal with it and agree with it.
We spoke to Gareth Barry last week about it, and he said the same. You can understand why the decision was made, but you just wonder, don't you? Just left wondering what might have been.
Yeah, because Gareth is a similar player, and I've known him for many years, and I know how he thinks, and I know, you know, people was talking about him moving to Man City, but that's the reason he moved, because he wanted to achieve. He's an achiever, you know. He's somebody who wants to go on and achieve things. He wants to make sure that he won medals, he won trophies. He's countable. It's okay to play well, but you know, end of your career, when you know he's retired now, and I know how he feels. He's like, you know what? When I've made that decision, I suffered a little bit through it, but I've shown everyone that I was good enough to win medals, to win the Premier League, to go and compete in the Champions League, compete in a different competition, and just show you that he's got that growth mindset, which is good to see. And that was most of the players. You can see Ashley Young went to Man United, won the UEFA Cup, become a champion. Fabian Delph to Man City, won the league as well. James Smith, you know, there's so many out there that they left the club and they went to achieve. And sometimes you thought, well, we had that, you know, we had that mentality. And, you know, if we would have had that chance, we probably would have taken it, because we were ready to do it. But it's something that you look back and you're thinking, if we could have done it, but we didn't.
That latest one, what was your favourite Villa kit from your time at the club and why?
Oh, my Villa kit. The 2008 one was the best for me. It was the time where we moved, I think we moved from Hummel. It was a little bit better. It was much. It was leaner. It was looking good. It was nice material. The fans were really happy with it because the branding, it was completely different. So the 2008 one was the best one for me.
As a player, do you kind of judge it in how it looks or how breathable it is, or does it matter? I mean, I suppose you've got to wear it regardless whether you like it or not, haven't you?
Yeah, listen, I'm always aware of it. You know, I've got big butt, so I'm always aware of it. Those white shorts are not very in good favor of me, man. I'll tell you that.
You're in fashion now with the Kardashians. You're allowed to have a big butt.
Well, it wasn't a good fashion when I was playing. They weren't that famous that time.
Let's have a look at the next one. Moving on, let's have a look at the next one. When you moved from Celtic to Villa, were there any other clubs in the Premier League or in England who you could have joined? And while you're at Villa, was there ever any interest in other clubs wanting to take you away from Villa?
Yes, actually, I was on the way down to sign for Portsmouth. I had agreement with Harry Redknapp. I was on the way down to sign with Portsmouth. Everything was agreed. And that was 2 days before the transfer window was closing. I was on the way to international duty. I was in Manchester airport, and I was waiting for Portsmouth to come to meet me and to sign the papers. But at that time, that evening, obviously Villa have put a bigger bid. So Celtic called me and said, now I have to speak with Villa. So everything changed very, very quickly in the space of a few hours. I had Portsmouth on my Portsmouth at 6 o'clock in the morning at my door at the hotel. Obviously, they're trying to change my mind, but the sooner I've heard about my O'Neill and what he's trying to build at Aston Villa, you know, I it was only one way forward, and I wanted to join Villa. It happened very quickly. I remember the negotiation was really really funny. Marty O'Neill was really funny. It was something that I'll never forget. He was arguing with my wife about, you know, that why I need to move and was the financial issues, because first of all, as much as a manager and a player, we had a great respect, and as a friends as well. So at that time, when I signed for Villa, Matt, I had to sign for less money than I was at Celtic, and I had to lose a lot of money to leave Celtic just to move for Villa. But you know what, Matt, and he was like, "It's a great move, Stan. You know, it's not about the money. It's a great move, and you're gonna play against the best." And you know what? That was enough for me, Matt. I knew that if I play well, if I put the right performances, if I defend what he believes in, Matt O'Neill, I'll always have the rewards after. I knew that the takeover was happening between the Gallias and obviously Randy Leonard at that time. So the finances wasn't there. So sometimes you just have to take risks. But the main goal for me was, Matt, was coming and competing in the Premier League. Matty O'Neill was really convincing about what he wants to build, what kind of players he wanted to bring to Aston Villa, what direction the club wanted to go. And it was enough for me. It was funny the way negotiation was going, but it was great at the end. You know, after that, when I signed my first new contract after that for Villa, it was very funny. And he just... You know, he don't talk about it, but he turned quite cheekily and said, "I've told you it's the right decision for you." And he never said a word. And I knew, yeah, I can't believe you just waited for that long to remind me this. he never forgets, Matt. He never forgets that, man.
Brilliant. Let's have a look at the next one. 4 years on, what are your thoughts now about the summer of 2016?
I'm over it now, Matt. It was really painful for me at... couple of months and a year and 2 years after that decision. You need to understand that the football was taken away from me. I didn't want it to finish in that way. I've give up everything in my life to become a footballer. I sacrificed so much. I had to work harder than everybody else. I wasn't talented. I had to really find the ways to get to where I wanted to be. I went through a lot of difficult moments, highs and lows in my career. I had to be different to make sure that I can achieve what I wanted to achieve. I've paid attention to all my preparation as individual, as a team player as well. So when you give all this to your life, and all of a sudden it's taken away from you. It's really difficult to accept. It was very difficult for me to make a decision to actually think about the comeback, because if you look at it, it's not just about what you want to do and how you want to do it. It's what you have to go through it. When I was diagnosed, I was 85 kilos. Bear in mind, when I had to make a decision that I actually thinking about a possible comeback, I was 129 kilos. 129 kilos, Matt. Now, imagine through all the treatments that I had, I've lost muscle, I've gained weight, I don't have endurance, I don't have stamina anymore. I've lost everything. As a footballer, as an athlete, you've lost everything. You haven't kicked the ball for 3 years. So you literally lost everything. So for me, it was like, should I give it a go? And my message was, when I had a person who helped me to get fit, and you know him, you remember Ryan. He used to look after most of the equipment stuff, the pool at Villa. Do you remember him?
Well, the name rings a bell. I can't quite
remember. You remember him. When you get back to your memories, you remember him. So he became a personal coach a few years later, and I started like, just, can I get you, get me fit? Would you, you can try help me, because I just don't want to, I didn't want to go in the gym because I was way overweight. People look at me in a different way. And sometimes you just want to say, you know what? I just want to step back. I just want to step back, give myself a time to get fit, to get in shape a little bit, just to look at them a different way, because I had the moon face. It was literally, I was huge. I was literally huge. My wife and kids still joke about it, how big I was, to be honest. But hey, this saved my life. And I'm
to me as well. Don't worry about that. I've still got
But going back, it was so it came just randomly. Of he said to me, "Do you think you can set?" Because then I started losing weight. Obviously I'm very focused. I'm very strong. If I put something on my mind, I just decided I have to do it, and I find way to do it. So in a space of like 3-4 months, he saw that I've dropped quite a lot. I'm working hard, my muscles start to coming back. He can see a little bit of definition of my muscles again. And from a jog, this actually become like, it came from a jog. It was like, do you think you can play again? And I went, I don't really know. I'd love to do that, but it's going to take a lot of hard work. And he was like, why you don't think about it and just let's see if that's going to work for us. So a week later, I said to him, I'll tell you what, I'm going to start playing a little bit of football with friends. Let's continue our work. Let's start to gain now to, how can I get my muscle memory back? Make sure that I'll lose the weight. I'll get the strength. I've got the stamina. I'm going to start running faster. We're going to get into more interval running. We need to get into more legs. I need to get into more my diet. And he was like, okay, let's do that. So we worked out a plan that we're going to follow for about 6 months and see what the results are. 6 months, not even 6 months, about 4 months later, he was like, you know what? I think you've got a chance. And I say, I'm pushing now. I'm in that zone now that I think I can do it. And by playing with friends, you know, when I was heavier, going and playing with friends, you can see they're faster than me. Some of them play in the lower league. Some of them are fitter and they can get away from me. But 4 or 5 months the line now, I became stronger. I become faster than them. Now, like, you can see the difference. Now you can see that my awareness is back again, my touches, my quick feet, my vision, everything is coming back now because it's just muscle memory. And I just had to make sure that I've got mentality again to work hard. By the time I started a preseason, Matt, I was 90 kilos. That was the weight I walked in for first day for preseason. And I tell you, that first day, I knew one thing. If that manager give me a chance, I'll push as much as I had. And I'm going back, not just to make money, not to be the player that Stylian Petrov used to be. I knew for me it was one thing, because the strong message is about people that fight in cancer, people that are going through difficult moments, that you still can go through difficult moments and find solutions and find opportunity and have different life and have better life. So I wanted to show everyone that who is going through difficult times, there is hope out there. And for me, even playing 1 minute, playing 10 minutes, playing two games, playing games, professional football, that message would have been strong. People talking about, did you, you wanted a contract? I didn't want a contract. I just wanted to say, that's me. I quit. But I quit on my own terms and on my own time. I wasn't given that opportunity, and it was really painful for me. Do I still understand why that happened? Because they didn't have to make that decision. I wasn't under contract. I was free. I could have done another 2 months of preseason. And I said one thing to Di Matteo, that either if I don't play, I'm a plus for you. I'm not a minus. I can race. And you can see, Matt, when I was training, and probably if you speak with a lot of the boys, you say, Ashley Westwood, I shared a room with him. If you see the way I was preparing before, after training, in the evenings, he's about, you know, I was in the iPads. I was with the game raiders on my feet. The boys would go and play cards. The boys would go and do this. The boys, I couldn't do it because I wasn't allowed to miss a second in the training. I wasn't allowed to miss a day because if I do that, they'll have excuse to say no. I didn't do it. I've done every single run. I've done every single session. I was every day first. I was every day last. And I'll tell you what, if you one day you manage to speak with Gabby, he'll tell you. I was with my group with me, and I remember we were in Austria. It was boiling. It was about 40 degrees. Honestly, we were doing double sessions. We're not talking about one session. We're talking about double sessions. So I remember we done a long first session. That was probably the last day before we left. And they say, this is going to be the last hardest run that you actually guys were doing in a preseason. I'll tell you what, Matt, I was literally on my knees. I wouldn't stop. Gabby was on my, I don't know how Gabby got in my group, man. That was the slowest group. He's still in my group. And I was like, what the hell is happening here? But listen, I remember the last run that we were doing, different interval runnings, and we were doing across the pitch. And I remember the last run we were doing in the different groups. And I remember the last run I had to stretch my legs, and I can feel my hamstrings is tightening up. We've done so much loading, and I wasn't there. You know, it's like I need to push, last push before I finish that run. I remember Gabby coming behind me, and he just pushing me. I can hear he's going, Stan, just remember your kids. You're doing it for your kids. And as much as I wanted to stop, I started laughing. I'm like, why is he bringing my kids into it? I hardly can run. So he just pushed me on the back of it. He supported me, and we just finished the run. I was on my knees, and he was like, brilliant, Stan. This is something that you should be proud of. You've completed. You haven't missed a session. And you know what? When they give you this kind of encouragement, and that's your teammates, you know, they've seen me, how I suffered through that preseason, but suffering not on the pitch, suffering by being in ice bath every day, eating the right way, going in bed early, making sure I'm prepared. Everybody else is like fully fit. They could do whatever they want. But I didn't have time because I wanted to do one thing, just play a minute, play a game or 10 games and say goodbye to football, because football was everything for me. But at the end, I didn't have the opportunity. After that, when I was told no, they had a couple teams in the League One, up in Scotland. They were like, come and play for us. But I didn't want to go and play football. I just wanted to finish at Villa, because that journey started at Villa, and I had the incredible support from the fans. And I just wanted to say goodbye. That was it. But obviously, the club didn't get the message. The club didn't want to do it. It was something that... it did hurt me a lot, but I've learned how to live with it, and I just realized that, you know, sometimes it's bigger things out there in life, and you just have to strive and try and go and achieve it. That's all. That's all, Matt.
As a Villa fan, just thank you for, and I know it wasn't the same, I know it wasn't Villa Park, 40,000, all wishing you farewell, but I was in a field in Stourport in Worcester to see you play that friendly. And there were only 1,000 Villa fans there, and we're all standing around the edges drinking pints out of plastic glasses. And just to see you back there, it meant the world to us. And it's not the arena that should have been your finale. Just to see you back there, and I remember you being swamped on the field at the end. Everybody was gathering around for selfies and autographs and stuff like that. And I hope that in that moment that you could see what you meant and what your efforts meant to Villa, even if it wasn't quite the kind of grandstand finish that you deserved.
Thank you. I remember that day very strongly, because I remember that the club actually was saying, well, we had so many requests, because if you remember, we were playing two games in the same day. We had one team had to travel in one way, the other team had to have the Worcester as well. So we had a lot of requests about where I was going to play. So just showing you about fans that wanted to come and watch, they wanted to see me. And to be honest, you know, we've played a game in Austria, we won. We played in Worcester, we won. So I finished with two great wins and I've managed to play with the boys again. I really enjoyed it. But when I was told that they won't offer me anything, I didn't want to be offered anything. I wanted just to be given a chance like everybody else. Obviously, it didn't work the way I thought that it was going to work. And I just had to take in the chin and just move on. It was really difficult the following 6 months. I was like, I didn't want to hear about football. I didn't want to talk about football. I didn't know what to do. I was lost. Just one of these periods that you have to deal with. But luckily, I've got good friends, good family, which they helped me a lot with great advices. I've spoke with a lot of former players as well, which I found that they had a really difficult about dealing with the retirement and how everything finished for them. So I've managed to learn very quickly. I've managed to understand very quickly how the industry works and to put myself a good plan and a good way of achieving other things.
What were the best and worst things about playing Sunday football? Was it with Wichel?
Yes, Wichel Wanderers, yeah. Where should I start, Matt? Where should I start? It's it reminds me of my youth development. It's about going having fun with friends, going having fun with people that actually still want to play football, still want to win games, still want to go up in the morning. You know, the funny things is like you see people from with a hangover coming and play football. They just want to come and enjoy kicking the ball. They're very competitive. They never made it as a professional player on any level, but they just wanted to come and enjoy. And I loved it. I loved it because first of all, we assembled very, really strong team. We had a very strong team. We were playing very good football. We had to compete against a couple of very good teams. I mean, some of the other teams, they had the Lee Henry, Paul Devlin, they had a couple of former players as well. So it was really good level. And I really enjoyed it because it gave me a purpose and gave me opportunity to kick the ball again. I was getting fitter. I was getting stronger. I enjoyed being out on the pitch, being around the dressing room again. Just putting a little bit of a discipline of what you want to do. And I was looking forward to Sundays, you know, because that's what I've done all my life. I play football. And I had the opportunity to do it again. We became champions twice. I've joined the team where we were in the second division. Then we got promoted. Then we won the league twice. The boys really enjoyed it. We moved into, you know, having like Christmas party, having gatherings together, having breakfast, preparing in the right way. They hated me, to be honest, Matt, because you know what? In those nearly 2.5 years, I never missed a game. I was always there. I was always there first. I was always there encouraging players because that was the way I was. And you know what, boys appreciated that. He gave them a bit of headache because they had to be more professional. And some of the times I'll put on the chat that not drinking, everybody better 10 and stuff like that. And they'll just laugh and just leave me, just say, Stan, leave us alone. And, you know, you move away from it. But it was something that I've missed. It was another opportunity for me to play football again and to strive for something because I wanted to get back to while I'm doing my coaching, buzzing, doing my educational courses. I wanted to have a distraction, and that distraction was playing Sunday league, and it was really enjoyable.
If you're explaining who Martin O'Neill is to a load of space aliens who have just landed on Earth, what would you say and how would you describe him?
I would describe him, well, say like me, reliable, honest, don't cross him. Because if you cross him, you're going to have the hair dryer. So I would say reliable, honest, unpredictable, I would say. Because when you're unpredictable, it makes you stronger. You don't know what to expect from a person. And if you're an alien and you land up, you want them to deal with somebody unpredictable, and he's definitely one of them.
So
probably you find out that on your interviews with him.
Well, listen, I know the hairdryer. His hairdryer was so severe with me that I've got no hair left. But have you ever been on the receiving end of that?
I've been arguing a couple of times in the sense of speaking about football and opinion. I would never cross the line to go and argue with him. I had to go and apologize a few times in his office. I'm going to put it that way. Matt, it's something that I think most of us done it. He was a very interesting character. He didn't let many people closer to him. He always kept a distance. So that's why I always say he's very unpredictable. But if you gain his trust, he loves you to the end. The sooner you let him down, you're in the black books. You just don't exist for him. Like I believe that's for most of the people dealing that way as well.
So do you think that unpredictability was the kind of beauty of his management, because you didn't want to let him down? You'd always got to kind of be in that in crowd with him.
It was unique. It was very unique how he dealt with it, how he managed to be your friend but be your enemy at the same time, and different profile. You know what? Sometimes you see him in the morning and he's going to be bubbly and he's going to be cuddling you and he's going to say things. Next thing, he's just going to pass you. You won't even say morning. And you're like, oh, what have I done? What happened from yesterday? But he was him. He wanted people to understand that, yeah, you can know me, but you can know me as much as I let you know me. You know, sometimes when I moved down to Villa, obviously the boys were saying to me, oh, how's Martin O'Neill? And I say, you know what, guys, I had at Celtic, there was a bigger characters than me. There was a Henry Glasson, Chris Sutton, John Harton, Alan Thompson, Neil Lennon, Paul Lambert. You know, they were the ones that actually talking to him. I was kind of on a learning curve. I was like, I need to perform. I had to earn his trust. I need to make sure he understand who I am, how he can challenge me to be better, what is good for me and how I can develop and how he can help me develop. So that was me. And everybody was like, what do you mean? You don't even talk to him and say no. So I became even more mature and bigger figure at Villa with him than actually at Celtic, because it was natural. You become more mature, more experienced, and he start trusting you even more. So it was a very difficult transition, you know, from Celtic to Villa, and how we communicate at Celtic and also at Villa as well. So I've learned a lot about him as a person and a human being.
Do you still speak now?
Yeah, of course. I speak with a lot of the manager. I text and speak with Alex McLeish now and then. Martin very quite often as well. I met Gerard Houllier, a couple of things. I haven't come across Roberto Di Matteo, to be honest. I would love to. To be honest, you know what? I would love to maybe one time when we meet up and catch up somewhere to go through and talk about things and, you know, understand the decisions a little bit more. But I hope that I'll have that opportunity in my life one day.
Right, let's see what's lurking next. What was Randy Lerner like?
I only spoke with Randy Lerner when I was ill. When I was a player, when I was a captain, I could only see him only when he comes to the training ground. And when he comes to the training ground, he didn't want to really interfere much with the players. He left that to obviously the coaching staff. He would only come and say hello, make sure that he shake everybody's hands. So that was my. But the funnily enough, Matt, when I got really ill, him and Paul Faulkner, they came to visit me quite often. He brought me very special gifts. I mean, special gifts related to Aston Villa, with the history of Aston Villa, portraits with the players that I've played. Which was very great, interesting gesture. And he's been around the hospital when I was ill for many times. We spoke about a lot about what way Villa will go, what direction will go. So it was interesting to understand. And we kept a good relationship. I haven't spoke to him for a while. I remember like a few years ago, he texted me just to check how I was held, how everything's going. I keep in touch with Paul Faulkner, who was really, really close to me when I got ill. He made sure that I was well looked after. We still keep in touch. So I had a great relationship, but our great relationship came outside actually the club is when I was ill. We shared some good stories, some good insights. And, you know, it was interesting to see the perspective of a chairman and how he wanted to approach the club and what he wants to do for the future.
This is slightly pre-Villa. you know, room, legend has it that you used to work in a burger van in Glasgow, which I think you used to shape your impeccable English. What is the perfect takeaway? If you could have takeaway on a Saturday night with Mrs. Petrov and the lads, what would you be eating?
Don't start me on that. We in the last couple of years, I've changed my diet completely. You're talking about now or before?
Both. Go on. Tell us before and now.
Before will be a Chinese. Now will be home cooked meal, and I'll tell you why. Because I've changed completely my diet since my illness. I've completely stopped red meat. I've completely stopped dairies. I don't eat eggs. I've stopped the coffee. I only have fish now and then. So mostly I'll say pescatarian. All the boys are saying, what are you at the moment, Stan? I'd say I'm confused, guys. I don't really know. But I don't eat all these things. Only one thing that I can refuse and I can't stop is the beer. I think we all love a beer, aren't we? Man, we have to enjoy something, for God's sake. but at the moment, if I have to order, I don't know. I'll probably have something healthier rather than not healthy. It's completely different vision and way I'm eating at the moment. But if I have to go, I'll go for the Indian.
Oh, nice. What would you have? Getting hungry now.
Prawn jalfrezi, I'll have it. And I'll have a little bit of naan bread. We need to get some naan. We'll throw some poppadoms in as well.
Oh, that's lovely. I hope I haven't thrown you off the wagon now.
No, you won't.
How many times have you watched the clip of that goal against Derby?
Hundreds of times. I'll tell you what, my boys watch it all the time. You know, the funny thing is, Matt, my little one, didn't have the pleasure and the chance to watch me and to remember me as a player. So now you'll come with his tablet and show me the Derby goal. You'll say, look at that, look at what you've done. Left foot as well, because obviously I practice with them. I try to teach them to use their both feet. So I've watched it hundreds of times. I'll tell you what, I tried to replicate it a couple of times. It never happened. I remember when I scored the goal after that, couple of weeks after we all tried to do it. I couldn't do it even with the right foot, don't mind with the left foot. So it's either a fluke or it's one of these moments that he just was there and I made the decision to do it and it became a unique goal.
It's a sweet strike with the left foot, though. Is that something that you worked on, Stan, to make sure that you could use your left foot?
Of course. Listen, when I was a young boy, and we touched on that when we started talking about how I worked and what I wanted to become, is I wanted to make sure, because I wasn't the talented boy when I was growing up. I wasn't the biggest. I wasn't the strongest. I wasn't the fittest. I wasn't the most gifted technically. So I had to work on it. I had to make sure that I understand football inside out. I understand my position. I develop in the right way. And you know what? If somebody asks me about what is your stronger foot, left or right, I don't have to hesitate and answer. I have to make sure that I say both, and I'm quite comfortable to stick with it and they agree with it as well.
So if we ever play again, you can probably nutmeg me with either foot, yeah?
Probably, yes.
Right, let's have a look at the next one. Have you ever come close to having a fight with a teammate in a match or in training?
Oh yeah, I had a fight. I had a big fight. If you remember, do you remember it was a centre defender we had at Celtic, Bobo Balde?
Oh yeah, yeah. He was a big bloke, wasn't he?
He wasn't big. He was literally huge. So I had a fight with him. At the time when he grabbed me to my throat, I was looking for a season to stab him. That's where I was. That where I was at that moment. We at Celtic, we had some incredible winners, and we hated losing the game. And after one game, we were arguing, and he went for me. I couldn't run away, and he grabbed me by the throat, and I was looking for scissors. The boys were trying to get him off me. He was throwing everybody away. All of a sudden, he realized what he'd done. He just dropped me, By that time, everybody's laughing. It wasn't funny for me, I'll tell you that thing. He's a huge boy, but you know what? It was all about, because we didn't like to lose. We all demanded very highly of each other. And this situation came across a few times, not just with me, but with other players as well, not just at Celtic, but at Villa as well, my previous clubs. Because when you play in a team that is actually required to win and to achieve, you have moments like that, but it just shows you what kind of characters you have. And I've been through one. It was scary, and I'm glad I'm still alive.
Can you remember when Martin and Rio Coca had that little spat at the training ground? What happened there, Stan?
Yeah, I did remember. We were doing 11-a-side. We were doing a tactical session. We was always playing, so Martin was giving different messages. And I remember that they were in the middle, and I think Nigel misplaced the pass. I think they started verbally to talk against each other and saying things. And all of a sudden, in a space of a seconds, they just squared each other. Nigel's preparing for a fight. Gaffer's fists were up here. Everybody was laughing. I just couldn't stop laughing. You can hear Nigel just jumping around, and Gaffer just getting his position ready to strike. And it was really funny. It was something that we see all the time. Obviously, they both were very strong characters. They both had a strong opinion. We made them more as a fun. I think Nigel got punished quite for a few games, I think. But in general, we took it as a joke, and we just tried to make sure that everything was okay after. We still joke with Nigel since today. He don't like it, but that's not a problem. That's his problem. Let him deal with it. And we loved it, and we'll never forget it.
I wasn't sure how to ask this, but do you think there were times at Villa when you were underrated and people didn't quite appreciate the contribution that you made? Because we've got all these flair players and these attacking players. Do you think sometimes people forgot the role that you played?
I knew my position was you have a kind of like that, because sometimes playing a deeper position, playing a position that you don't getting much of the highlights, will always be the case. And don't forget, when I was the first signing for Matthew O'Neill, so everybody's looking. I became a captain as well, so everybody too was looking to lead in the right way. But I had to do it in a different way. And sometimes I did ask that question to myself, but I had a straight answer. You know, we had some incredible players, creative players, players with great ambitions, players with great characters as well. And when you have something like that, you just have to just understand your role in the team. And I understood my role, and I knew how important my role is. And the main thing, Matt, was the players appreciated my role and my input, which is the most important for me, because end of the day, I play with them. I try to be a good teammate. I try to make sure not just I perform as well, but they perform as well. Because if we do it together, then we have a more chance to succeed.
That team, it was such a good team, such a good, likeable bunch of people as well as footballers, that it just missing that one tangible thing, wasn't it, to kind of celebrate the success. And that was a trophy, or that was the Champions League. And it was, again, so close.
Yeah, we've achieved, and we created great memories together as a team, as a fans, as a club, as you know, all together. But what was missing is a trophy for us. This is the downfall for us, Matt, and we all know about it. We all know about it, and we still talk about it sometimes. We all believe that we could have done it, but it's not what you believe. It's important what you achieve, and we were very close. But you know what? Every single one who left the club, every single one who played in that team, always believed that we were a strong team. We were a team who had the chance but never managed to achieve and actually reach our potential, real potential.
You know, without me wishing to be doom and gloom about it, I think it will go down as, you know, it's been a lean time for Villa fans in the last, you know, since the 90s, the 80s and 90s, when they were winning trophies regularly. That your team, Martin O'Neill's team, goes down as the best team a generation of football fans have seen. So I don't want to be seen as kind of poking holes and saying, why didn't you win this and why didn't you do that? Because I think the legacy that you guys have left is still a very strong one.
Yeah, and you know what? The main objective was on what, as a team, what you do is what you want to achieve is we felt the buzz around the place. We felt the buzz, the preparation for the games. We knew that everybody we face, everybody we played against, they fear us. I knew the fans were looking forward to going away games. The fans were looking forward to getting to our home games because we entertained. We were scoring goals. We were always in the game. And we, you know what, even against the big teams, we give the big teams a difficult time. And the fans loved it. The fans loved it. The away fans were incredible because they was looking forward because we had so much pace. We can counter-attack. We can control a game. We can battle. We could have done everything what is required to be a good team. And they knew that. So that makes you special in some kind of way.
What was it like when you saw hundreds of versions of your own face staring back at you at Wigan with all the masks? Well, that must have been surreal.
It was weird, I put it that way. It was very weird, but it was very overwhelming what the club done and what the fans done as well. I remember I was on the bench that day. Paul Lambert told me to be on the bench. I really enjoyed the experience. He took me after the game and we went and clubbed the fans and they all put their masks on. It was incredible. It was really good, and it was an experience that I will never forget.
What was it like from a family point of view? Was did that give them some kind of comfort, knowing that you were so loved by the football club and the fans?
Yeah, they loved it. They enjoyed it. But you know, the funny thing, Matt, is, and the interesting thing about that is my kids now, because they were so young, and now everything on the internet, everything around when I speak with people, they were talking about, you know, just how my illness is and how I recover from it. Nobody really talk about my football achievements anymore, which for my kids something was very difficult. And my little one asked me before, he said, "Oh, Dad, why everybody's asking me how you are? You're good at the moment. Why they keep asking you that question?" And it's very difficult to understand because he didn't know about it. He haven't seen me. He don't have the memories of me playing. So what he've only seen is actually the support of what I've been through in the last couple of years. So it's really difficult. You know, when you have a young kids, you still have to explain and let them understand what the process is and how everything works. So it's really difficult, and that's why, you know, if I had the chance to play again, they could have seen me and they could have remembered me and know that their dad done everything that he've achieved on the pitch as well, not just watching it from YouTube on the internet.
Is it right that your oldest lad is a decent little player himself now? Is he with Solihull Moors?
He's with Solihull Moors, so he's all right. He had a change of heart. He tried as a goalkeeper, then he was outfield. He's back to a goalkeeper now. He's one of these stages. I support him with everything he does. He's a good character, and you know what? He may have a chance. He may not have a chance. I say, as long as you try and you believe that what you can do, the opportunity may come, but you have to be patient.
How old is he now, Stan?
17.
Is he? Blimey. You don't look old. You've got a 17-year-old son.
Listen, Matt, you know, I used to be stronger in a gym than him. I used to be faster than him. I'm not even near that anymore. He's faster than me now. I go to run with him and he's way ahead of me. So it's not good.
They grow up fast, don't they? I've got a 12-year-old lad and he's already taller than me and he can beat me in arm wrestles and stuff like that. So he's going to be taken.
To be honest, Matt, that's not hard, to be honest. To be faster than you. Come on.
God, just saying, boys, before you're there, where did you meet Paulina and was it love at first sight?
Yeah, I met Paulina in the nightclub. Obviously, I was a wild boy when I was in Bulgaria. I was young. I was Bulgarian international. I came back for one of my international games, Matt, and I've met her in the club. We fell in love since the day one. I spoke with Paulina. I met her that night, and that was about 3 o'clock in the morning in a club. My flight to Scotland was at 6:30. So from there, I just packed my bag and I straight in the airport, went straight to back to the club. So by the time we met that night, and for the following 4 months, I didn't go back to Bulgaria. So we were constantly speaking on the phone. It was literally love, and we just felt it from the first moment. And you know what? I'm glad that I've met her, because she's been very strong beside me. She's been a great help. She's been a great advisor and great mom as well, great wife, which is sometime in life we try to find the perfect match, the perfect half. And I've managed to do that. And, you know, everything happened for a reason. We met that night, and we never looked back.
I think you've done well for yourself there, mate. I think she's done all right as well, hasn't she?
She's a lucky lady, Matt. Don't you start. She's a lucky lady.
Oh, right. I'm nearly done.
What are you doing now? Not right now, but what are you doing with your life currently? And what's your next ambition, Stan?
My phone is keep ringing him. I love that.
Popular man.
Yeah, Gabby Bonaho just calling me. I just need to answer, but I'll answer after that.
Yeah, no worries.
No, I'm just joking. I'm joking. It's not him. After I retired, Matt, it was a big dilemma for me what I wanted to do, how I wanted to proceed with my future, what was on the map for me. So I've put a plan for me to undergo going through all the coaching badges. So in the last 4 years, I've completed every single one of them, B, A, and the pro license. I went through a MIP course, which is a course for Master of International Players, Sport Management course, which I wanted to give myself the best chance to stay in football, in not just in, as a coach, but in a different roles as well, to manage to understand the industry much better. At the moment, what I do, I'm involved in a very interesting project. It's called Player for Player, which we're trying to make the transition for former players and current players much better, to avoid the mistakes that we've made and to give them the right guidance, mentoring, and opportunities to make that transition much smoother, much better, in an easier way, and to find better opportunities after they finish their careers.
So do you see yourself back in full-time football and on a day-to-day basis as a manager or a coach? Or where did you do all your badges, Stan?
I've done it in Ireland. I've done it there. It took me 4 years, which it's a long time. If you look at Matt, you know, if you want to do all your coaching badges, if you have the right education, if you want to give yourself the best chance that you can have in coaching, you have to go through stuff like that. I wanted to be a person who people don't find excuses about. I wanted to make sure I'm doing the right way, step by step. I'd love to go back to football one day, and that's why I've done all these steps. Would I like to do it? Yes. There's opportunity came across. I had a couple opportunities. I didn't find the right one, but I always believe, and I always been positive, as you know me, and I believe that it's a train for every passenger, and I'll wait for mine. Mine will come. I'm quite patient. I'm prepared. I'm ready. And if that opportunity comes, I'm ready for it.
So when you're Aston Villa manager in 5 years' time, you're going to have an open door policy for all the press. We can come and sit in Bodymore with you, a nice cup of coffee, and you can tell us everything, yeah?
I'd love that. I'd love that, Matt. But going back to Villa, you know, the boys started the season well. They've picked up some great victories. They've not been as consistent as we wanted to see them. But I think it's much positive start for the boys from the last two or three seasons.
This is the very last one. You'll be relieved to know, because I know you want to go and order yourself an Indian.
I'll tell you what, if I have a beer next time, you better send me that mug. We'll never finish.
I think I owe you about 10 beers for a given time. So when we're allowed to, when the world's a better place, I'll come and buy you a beer.
I'd love to.
Right. What is the significance of the number 19?
You know, sometimes as players, as individuals, we have like a superstitious. Number 9 and 1, I've got it in my... I was married on the 9th of June. I signed for Celtic 1999. So I kind of have that number 19 as a superstition. I've started it up at Celtic. I've played really well with it. I felt that it's like a little talisman for me. So I always wanted to play number 19. And it's funny enough, it's sometimes you find something that you get hold on and you think is working for you and you stick with it. that was me with the number 19. And you know what? It's good to see now. Sometime I go back to Bulgaria and I see a lot of young kids playing with number 19. And every time I ask the question or somebody else asks them question and they say, well, we would like to be like Stilian Petrov. And he was playing like a number 19. So, you know, you leave a little bit of a legacy, some kind of legacy that actually some young kids relate to, which is a great thing to see. But for me, it's more like a look and little superstitious, I'll say.
Well, I think the number 19 will always be synonymous with Stilian Petrov and Aston Villa, as will the fact that you're just a really, really humble, friendly, articulate. You know all this.
Thanks, Matt.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for giving us so much of your time. I've enjoyed it. I hope you didn't mind the kind of random way that we've kind of told bits of your career and you know, got you back in touch with Villa fans who I know respect you and love you and really, really proud that you've represented our football club so well over the years. So all that remains to say in this podcast is thanks for your time. Have a brilliant Christmas. Hope 2021 treats you and your family really well. Hope you all stay healthy. And I promise you, I will buy you that pint in the new year, mate.
I wish you all the best on a festive season. Happy Christmas. And I hope and I wish everyone a lot of happiness and health.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, up the Villa.